welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, November 2nd, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 38. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
And I'm RJ.
And welcome to the show. If you want to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as over on Facebook. You can email us, everyone at ingamechat.net. We're streaming the cam feed right now through Twitch. And you can find us there as well as join in the chat room live while we broadcast. So, welcome to the show. Got a lot to cover in this episode. Sort of teased a little bit of... Teased a couple of things already. Obviously, coming up at in the second hour, at the top of the second hour, we're going to be talking with Rand Miller from Cyan Worlds. This is a big deal for me. We talked about it on the last show. I am a huge fan of Myst, the entire Myst series. And Rand is a co-creator of that company and that series of games, and it's a big, big thrill for me to be able to speak with him on the show today. Gonna try and get through it without being gushy and fanboyish.
You will not get through it without being gushy and fanboyish.
I know.
You have never once, under any conditions, circumstances, any iteration of the show, offline, online, live, pre-recorded, surprise, long planned, or in any other way, managed to get through an interview with someone of whom you are a great fan without turning into a nine-year-old.
And for those of you who are just tuning in for the first time because of this, that is James. And he knows me very well, and he knows me well enough to know that when I talk to people like this who have shaped my gaming life...
Man, I just love what you do!
Yeah. That's pretty much all you'll get
you
out of
it. Expect about 30% of the interview questions to be precisely that.
So I'm going to try and do my best on that. By the way, if you're in the chat room and you are here for that interview, you are more than welcome to submit questions in the chat room to Rand, and we will ask them on the air and get your questions across. So please, by all means, do that. We've also teased in picture form as well that we have got a PS4. A DualShock 4 controller in the room, and we've been looking it over here pre-show. As soon as RJ got here, they started going over the particulars of the controller itself. So we'll be talking about that. I've got more to say about Batman Arkham Origins. Not much more that I didn't write about already over at ingamechat.net. Very lengthy sort of observation of the game. And I played a little bit of Battlefield 4, not as much as James has played so far. So we'll have some assessments on that and how that game's looking. We're 2 weeks away from the PS4 release, and right now you can walk into any GameStop in the area. I think you can order them from Amazon as well, but I know that if you want them right now, GameStops are your place to go, and they have the DualShock 4s on sale in their stores. I think $60 is the retail price for one of these, and you can kind of get an idea of it. I think it works with PS3 games right now.
For the most part, as long as it's plugged in directly through the USB cord, it doesn't communicate on Bluetooth.
Yeah.
And my understanding is the only thing that does not work is the PS button itself. You cannot, which is a little unfortunate. You can't bring up the cross-media bar from within a game.
Now, I've heard that some of the games it didn't work with. Is that true?
I think it's probably true.
Grand Theft Auto 5, for one,
It did not work. You're right. It does work with Last of Us. That was the first thing I saw. We're hardly the first people in the world to get a hold of this thing since they started selling them early.
Yeah.
But it's still nice to get it a couple of weeks ahead of the actual release. And, you know, not for nothing, but there's been a lot of people over the course of the last 6 months or so that have played with the controller. They have lauded it. They have told us endless length what a fantastic improvement it is over the DualShock 3, an almost universally reviled controller, or a controller that has universally reviled elements. But, you know, it's one thing to experience something on a show floor or in a closed environment or in an invitation-only event or with a PR spokesperson or somebody standing next to you over your shoulder telling you everything about how much better it actually is, or... Even if you're left to your own devices with 5 or 10 minutes with the controller in your hand, you're not in a very objective environment. Show floors of expos and conventions are not objective places. So we had a friend do us a solid, So we have access to the DualShock 4 for tonight, and we brought along a DualShock 3 and an Xbox 360 controller just for the purposes of direct, moment-to-moment, direct comparison.
Yeah, so. And you've got it plugged into your...
I did. Right, I did have, but this is a, you know, this is a productivity laptop, so I don't have anything fun. I don't have anything
that I know, there's no way
I could possibly do with the controller at the moment.
But it didn't.
Anyway.
But it wasn't a situation where it's like, I don't know what this is, go away.
Yeah, right. No, it installed a thing, and then it said, I don't know what to do with you. You can go away now. The fun little front light turns orange, a very light orange, amber. Sort of color when it's
probably
charging.
When it's charging
directly.
That sort of thing, yeah.
But we haven't, you know, had the opportunity to play anything directly with it, but I don't know. RJ, Scott, and I, we all look at controllers a different way. I mean, controllers are an incredibly important piece of technology, just not for what it is they do, but for the fact that you're liable to put thousands of hours into something like this. This is the perfect expression of ergonomics. This is as important to your gameplay as the shape of the chair you sit in, you know, as your posture, as anything else. This is an incredibly crucial thing. So it's no small feat to have gone all the way back to their previous design. And rather than defending it, try to come out the other side with some serious improvements. And they've obviously not only studied the competition's controllers, but I would say... there is more going on here that is the result of focus testing than copying of someone else's elements.
Yeah.
But my opinion is actually, in a word, mixed. Again, setting aside the fact that I haven't actually played anything on it, this is not like controller Jesus. You know, I mean, but it's not.
No,
it's
I
a
get
really
what you're saying.
It's a really good controller, but this is, I mean, in the 15, 20 minutes I've been messing around with it, and again, jumping back and forth to the other controllers, there are huge improvements here, but there's a lot going on that I don't understand why people have necessarily let go. I think the D-pad is fantastic. I don't know if you agree on that. You've put a lot more miles on D-pads than I do.
Yeah, the D-pad feels fine to me. I mean, the first thing I notice is that the spaces between the DualShock 3 and the DualShock PS4
right.
controller, there's not as much space there, and it's real stiff, and it's real...
Yeah.
Real,
all the individual elements are actually bigger. They're smoother. They're depressed towards the center, so you can rest your thumb right in it, and there's no abrasion. There's nothing sharp.
Mm-hmm. Good point,
there's
yeah.
no great yeah. pressure. You can actually swing your thumb around for a half-circle, quarter-circle type of move,
yeah,
and it's like a lot better. And it is quite stiff, but it feels beautiful. It actually feels quite beautiful. The sticks, I can't say enough good about the sticks. The tension on these sticks is fantastic. I always thought that the 360 controller felt nice and taut, you know, with a really, really...
Yeah, and just so everybody knows, we do have a DualShock 3 in the studio with us. We also have an Xbox 360 controller. The, I don't think that's... Did they ever do it? Did they do a redesign on those or something? I can't remember.
On what? On the 360?
Yes.
I don't believe so. I think that has more or less stayed
the same from
the
launch.
I mean, and that's... The big redesign actually happened between the initial Xbox One controller, the OG Xbox.
That's right, the S. They
and
the
S.
controller S.
And
yeah.
this controller, the 360 controller, takes every one of its cues from the S.
They did do some type of revision to the controller, but I think it was just the D-pad, if I remember right. The D-pad changed in some way, shape, or form for one of the Xbox 360.
For one of the versions of it. Actually, it's not a universal change.
But it wasn't, right, exactly. So
it was like that the silver one, the chrome one maybe, or maybe one of the special bundle editions.
I know.
I think it was something along those lines, and I've never touched one.
The way we're talking about it obviously tells you how much it took hold with our interest
right.
in that regard. So,
but these sticks are peerless.
Nabokov says it went from a four-way to an eight-way.
Okay.
Controller or D-pad. So.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, that is a significant change for some people. Although I still can't stand that layout.
Mm-hmm.
So, without any question, this is my new favorite D-pad and my new favorite sticks. I mean, the Dead Zone they're so snappy. The Dead Zone is so great. I don't think prefer the L3 R3, the vertical.
I can
click
hear
down
a little bit of that clicking
on the sticks. I don't. It's mushier, I guess. Feels a little. There is no lift on these sticks. I don't know if you've ever taken your analog stick and kind of pulled them up, where they pull up in the seating, you know, in their housing, which is part of the reason why the whole thing feels a little bit loose, a little bit bagged out. This entire arrangement is diesel. I mean, it's really tough. It's really, really well built. There's something about the sharp click, that sharp mechanical keyboard. I mean, this is like, that's like a cherry red or that's something right there. That's really, really nice.
That's the current PlayStation DualShock 3. Yeah. The DualShock 3.
This is firm. Just I don't think it's as great. Face buttons are fantastic. No longer analog, of course. The way the face is built is much nicer. There's no embossing or embellishment. And the buttons themselves are probably, they're broader and they're flatter. And that's really, really nice. Triggers, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
They're okay, but I don't know that. Look, any improvement, and I mean literally any improvement over the DualShock 3.
The Troggers, yeah.
Triggers would be better. Anything would be an improvement, rather. But these are nice. They're nice. They're easy to feel. Probably a lot of good control on them. I don't know that I like them.
Personally, I like them to curve out a little more, actually.
And they feel stunted and short, and I don't exactly know what that is. I might change my mind with usage, but I don't. No. 360 still wins on triggers, which means, barring anything else I've heard not being true, the Xbox One triggers are probably going to be fantastic. They're probably going to be the superior. I wish somebody would come along and make a controller like that phone that, who is it? Is it Motorola is doing that? The little modular.
The phone block?
Yeah, the phone thing. Somebody make a... No, don't make a controller like that. Ignore that I said that at all. It was a horrible idea. R1, L1, you know, in the bumper position. I guess it's okay. I despise...
Okay, yeah. This. We're getting to the touchpad situation.
I don't know about the responsiveness of the touchpad, but it's, you know, it's a clicky pad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is... it's inconsistent. You know, it's a single click, right? It's not positional. It's not area aware. Yeah. So it's...
I'm already thinking about some errant touchpad press while playing.
Yeah, like if you're... I think that's going to happen a lot. Or you know what'll happen? Maybe an errant touchpad press while you're looking for the option and the share buttons.
Yeah.
And the thing about those is they're recessed, or they're flush mounted for the most part, rather. So without looking down, it's actually a little difficult to find them, because they act as your start and select, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of hard to find them, you know.
Yeah, because nothing's recessed on the 360
right.
or the
you
PS3
can, pad. You can kind of drag your fingers or your thumbs rather across the top of the controller and feel that ridge a little bit, but your thumb is dragging onto the touchpad. I hope, I'm going to assume that any developer is going to be aware of that and that the touchpad is not something you can simply brush your thumb across and get input. Like, you kind of have to go out of your way to initialize it as a thing in the game. I don't know. That's very
strange. It'll be interesting to see once this thing gets out in the wild and you have millions or, well, at
well,
least...
you need... yes.
Tons of thousands of...
Tons,
you know,
of thousands. That many thousands. People, at the very least, need to be playing with this controller on all available
right,
games.
Right, exactly. Because
really
the reason that we got... we brought this up earlier. The reason that we got a original Xbox controller and then a redesign was because of the complaints of, like, this thing is too huge. So enough people get out there to play it and they find some issues. You could easily see a redesign of the DualShock 4.
Man, I don't know. We saw, I mean, you're talking about belly aching on the Xbox OG's first controller.
Even have vibration in it when it was...
No, but they didn't change the form factor at all. They didn't change the outward anything.
Mm-hmm.
You it's required if you want to call yourself hardcore or serious enough that you buy a third-party product for, you know, a buck and a half or whatever it is, and then snap them or super glue them onto the end of your triggers. Like... that required modification to meet people's standards. I don't see them changing much here at all. This is very solid. This controller feels good. This feels like $60.
Yeah.
At the very least. This is a very... and the texturing on the back is... I don't know. It feels like a piece of something out of Metal Gear. You know, like Solid Snake would have this like like attached to his belt or something.
Feels
I don't
like
know.
Some feels like some micro mesh fabric or something.
Yeah, it does. It feels fantastic. Everything about it is the construction is completely pro. It's completely great. There's some stuff I don't like, and I really, really hate that. It feels mushy and broken.
He's talking about the touchpad, the clickable touchpad.
The clickable portion of the touchpad I hate. The surface on the touchpad is great. So, and I think the PS button itself is actually maybe a little bit better.
Hey, you made it blink.
Did I? Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's fine. It just did something, obviously, and I wanted to tell you about it.
Overall, man, if... you know, we obviously haven't played with the headset extension port, or obviously we have no input or output, rather, coming from the speaker, so we don't know about those things. But in your hand, this stands head and shoulders above the other two. They feel like cheap plastic toys compared to this. I mean, they feel like some kind of child's Fisher-Price version of a controller when this is in your hand. This is magnificently well made. We'll see how it holds up over time, obviously, but all in all, I think people are going to be really happy with it, but there are going to be people that have very specific opinions about how some of this stuff feels. And I don't know why. We took a photograph, and it really is a seriously big controller.
It is, yeah.
Compared to the other two. But for some reason, it wants to climb deeper into my palms. I don't know if anybody on the stream can see, but for whatever reason, it feels like it wants to drop further and further down in my palms. And I think, it sounds very silly, I know, but I think the shorter handpiece, the shorter handhold section on the DualShock 3 was better. Because I kind of buried it. RJ and I both felt the same way. Buried it in the crook of your palm.
But you put it exactly where you've been putting.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But this, for whatever reason, I feel like just wants to keep creeping deeper and deeper into my palm, and my hands almost want to climb up over the top of it. I don't know about that, and that's something you can only learn after dozens of hours of gameplay. So, as far as just overall shape, I don't know. I still give it to the 360. I'm one of the people that prefers offset analog sticks. That's a personal preference as well. But this is fine. This is a nice piece of controller tech, I think.
Molthal says, would that not be because of the touchpad, the slide down? Would that not be because of
No, because it's nowhere near that. It really is something about where my hands, where the knuckles on my index fingers, where everything
wants
to
rest. We'd
like
you to keep in mind that James is a very big guy.
I am an enormous human being. There are no small people in the studio.
Really, there isn't.
The short guy is, what are you, 6'4"?
I'm 6'1", yeah.
I don't know.
It's like, James, me and you have pretty much the same size hand. So when we both held this thing, the end of the PS3 controller, you know, it fits in the dead center palm of our hand, but the one for the PS4 fits like on the heel
of
our hand.
Yeah, and I just feel like I have a lot more... stable. Yeah, so
How easy do your thumbs make it to the touchpad without you trying to reach to it or anything like that? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you mean like laying in like this?
In other words, to access it.
To access the touchpad?
Conveniently without... Do you have to move your hand too much, or is it easy to get to?
No, I think it's actually perfectly easy to get to. Yeah. You have to float the control... Again, big hands. And this is an issue, right? I mean, this is supposed to be for everybody.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing you expect to be in everybody's hands. So they do have to make a... kind of consideration for that. I feel like I have to float the controller a little bit to let my thumbs kind of jump up off the triggers there, if that makes any sense.
The reason I bring that up is I played with that controller when I was demoing Assassin's Creed 4 at PAX. And for the most part, I didn't really take note of the fact I was playing with a DualShock 4 controller. When I was playing the game, the controls, everything else, it still felt... there wasn't anything until I wanted to bring up the map. And the way you bring up the map is you click the touchpad.
I see, yeah.
You click the touchpad, that brings up the map, and then you can zoom in by, you know, pinch and pull type situation.
See, just doing that, though, I hate it. There is no... I'm sorry, I know you guys can't see. I'm trying to keep it down kind of where it would be if I was playing. Out of my sight, everything is just tactile response, and there is no definitive, no clean click that can be heard or especially well felt.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it sort of depends on where on the touchpad you click. I mean, obviously, you'll see the effect on screen. And if you want to be sure, you can just, you know, click the bejesus out of it, I suppose. But it's not as definitive a click as everything else. And I don't know.
Nabokov's asking, do any of the buttons have mechanical switches or still rubber dome?
Oh,
membrane?
No, this is all membrane. There's nothing that we would, from the PC side, nothing that we would consider mechanical. This is still, I should say, you know, a toy in that regard. But I don't know. Anyway, not to, you know, absolutely go on for 100 forevers about the DualShock 4, but it's very, very nice to have something like this in your hands without having to, you know, spend the money or find someone who has, you know, it's an important question for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Some people downplay the comparisons between controllers, but it matters quite a bit to a lot of people. There are people who make decisions based on the thousands of hours they're going to have this in their hands.
I point you to the guy across the room here, RJ, who goes to tournaments constantly, fighting games mainly. Mm-hmm. As a fighting game guy, mm-hmm. what are your thoughts on that?
Well, usually when I play a fighting game on a default controller, I would use the D-pad more than anything else as opposed to the analog stick. And I was doing the traditional quarter circle forward, quarter circle back, half circle, dragon punch motions, and it felt pretty good and solid to me. So I would have no problem using it for those type of games.
Yeah, it was comfortable in the hand for that sort of motion.
Because I could rest my thumb in the dead center of the D-pad and do any motion I want to. I mean, even 360s for special grabs and things of that nature.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you go. Our assessment of the DualShock 4. Again, the system comes out in 2 weeks. Well, yeah, not next Friday, but the Friday
right.
after next.
2 weeks from yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and the controllers are obviously in stores now if you want to get your hands on them. I don't think they have any like sitting out that you can just walk into a store and sort of
not
grip yet.
Not yet. Our understanding is that if you're lucky enough, depending on where things are in your district or in your area, GameStop may well have demonstration units beginning a little more than a week from now.
Mm-hmm. For the PS4.
For the PS4. So maybe only one per area, one per district type of thing. So if you can get somewhere and put your hands on it, I recommend it. Although the demo units can sometimes be a little less than useful because of how they actually mount the controllers.
Yeah.
In an anti-theft packaging or bound in such a way that, again, enormous giant human being.
Right. They come up to our knees.
I have to like spread my legs apart and do a half split and then kind of hunch down in order to be at the right level for the controller.
You remember those stances I had at the arcade when I was playing there?
Right.
I had to like have this wide legged stance and I'm like so low to the ground, try to get to the.
Nobody likes it when you do that. There's nothing about that anybody wants to see.
Yeah.
So whatever. Something's better than nothing, I imagine.
Yeah.
And take from it what you will, what we have said. I welcome any further disagreement or wars about things. But I am glad that I did not buy one in the hopes of replacing it as my PC controller. I'm still quite happy with my wired 360 controller. And I guess I will wait. I don't know why. Madness is the only realistic answer. I will wait until Microsoft enables PC support for the Xbox One controller.
Yeah.
Because that's not happening right away.
No, it's not. It's
and
not.
That's a miserable... There is no real good answer to that.
Well, we'll have more on the launch of the new systems here and more of in-game chat when we come back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat, and don't forget, coming up at the in the next hour, in fact, in about 30 minutes, a little less than 30 minutes, we're going to be speaking with Rand Miller from Cyan Worlds to talk about their latest Kickstarter, their newest Kickstarter, their newest project, Abduction, and of course, I cannot not talk to him about Myst. and everything else, and not just gush. So thanks, everybody who's in the chat room. There's a ton of people in the chat room, and you guys are throwing your questions out. Hold your questions until Rand is on, because in the meantime, all this conversation, I'm trying to keep track of what's being asked and from who and get them into the list, and they scroll by pretty fast once those questions come. So just hang on to them until Rand is on with us at the top of the hour. So thank you so much, though, for being here. One word from last week's show. We were talking about Call of Duty Ghosts and the issue of it running at 720p on the Xbox One and 1080p on the PS4. And we got confirmation from Infinity Ward, actually, who said, yeah, it runs native 1080p on the PS4, and it runs 1080p upscaled from 720p on the Xbox One. So that is the official statement on how those are going to work out. One of the other official statements that we got is that Titanfall is exclusive to Microsoft Xbox One and
That's
PC for the life of the title.
Just the... That is the pits, man. That is terrible. I mean, we have... We just live... All right. I really, really don't want to, like, take off like a rocket on this issue, but it has... I found it has divided opinions in a very specific way, and it doesn't really have anything to do with... whether or not you currently hate or love or ambivalent towards Microsoft. The problem here is that there is, I can think of no reason necessarily where it's in EA's long-term interests to do this. We know that, because they're publishing it.
Right, EA is the one that made this deal. The guys
with Microsoft, and it was very, very clear from...
the guys from...
Was it Zampella?
I think it was Zampella from Respawn.
And he frowny faced about it and essentially said this was done behind our backs. This was not us, and this is not what we were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But this is apparently what EA partnership means these days. You can derive whatever sort of conclusions you want from it. But Microsoft needs a home run. They need something huge. They need an enormous stick to swing around in the first year of this next console's release. Each of them does, really. Microsoft needs it worse, and they know it. The implications early on in the past 6 months were that this was going to be some kind of timed exclusive, right? There are people who think that, it was stupid to ever think that this would come to another platform, that it would come to the PS4. I feel like if this was locked up, if this was 100% done deal 6 months back when they were talking about this, they would have gone out of their way to make sure we knew it. Yes, they asked us, had we seen Titanfall? Yes, they brought it up and associated it with their console as much as possible. But if they had had exclusivity sewn up, there's no way that they would not have talked about that. Mm-hmm. I feel like they were negotiating between the two of them, Microsoft and EA, for a way to make this happen, to extend it as long as possible, to see what they could do to bring the advantage all the way over to Microsoft's side. And EA lost a lot of revenue. You know, this past, what, quarter? They're down by, like, a lot. Their losses are pretty heavy. And Microsoft only has one thing. They don't have the momentum. They don't have even the marketing strength that you would expect them to. But they have an enormous war chest. They have a huge money bin. And that's their biggest tool. It's been their biggest tool for years. So they can buy exclusivity, and EA needs money. And I think it's as simple as that. But I despise this. I do not like this. And I don't think it is equivalent to having your own first parties or strong second party relationships in-house. I think those things define your system. I believe that you can look at us. I would not call crazy a person who decided to buy a PlayStation 4 based almost entirely on their in-house studios.
Oh, yeah.
Hell, based only on the true knowledge that there will be another Naughty Dog game.
Yeah.
There will be several Naughty Dog games.
Exactly.
And, man, it's going to be a huge trip, and I'm in for it. Having an in-house studio, having exclusivity through a studio or an organization that you either own or are in long-term contractual relationships with, helps define your system. It helps shape the picture of who you are and what you are. It makes them part of your family. They can nurture their work better because they have a closer relationship with the developers of the tools.
Right.
They're not operating in a third-party type environment, you know? And it gives the consumer some idea of what he can expect. Do you not like Naughty Dog's type of games? Are you the kind of person who doesn't really care for Uncharted? then you know ahead of time that that's not necessarily a selling point for you on the Sony machine. You can make an informed decision based on those relationships, based on the family portrait of one platform or another. But when you do what Microsoft is doing now, when at any moment the possibility that the highest bidder is going to own exclusivity, that leaves you in the lurch for years and years and years, knowing that these third parties will potentially, and I'm just trying to describe the fear here, potentially be drawn one way or another, depending on their individual needs and the needs and the willingness to spend of the platform holder. And I don't like that. It is not the same thing, and it makes for a very difficult time when the goalposts are always moving. Or, well, that's not a great metaphor, but when the landscape shifts so often.
Right.
Buying exclusivity of a third party, not to specifically nurture some underfunded, underloved, kickstarted project, not to help something blossom from early growth into a full AAA type of thing. We're not talking about Portal here, right? We're not talking about, you know, raising an eyebrow at Narbacular Drop and then turning it into Portal. That's not what we're talking about. We're looking at something that was always going to be a fully baked, fully realized AAA release and giving them money to keep it away from someone else. That is not good. First-party development, first-party ownership, those long-term relationships, which Sony has maintained, I think work really well in everyone's favor. This kind of business is uncomfortable. This makes me uneasy, and I'm not particularly happy about it at all, except to say, you know, I feel like I'm well above the waterline because at least I'm getting it on the PC.
Right, yeah. I mean, same here. And to that point, going over to the thing that you saw about Destiny being console exclusive and not being picked up, obviously, or at least not seemingly to be brought to the PC, which doesn't sound like Microsoft or Sony paid for this. It just sounds like a decision, apparently, that either Activision or Bungie is making.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have anything confirmed on
this.
There's
less information to go on there, other than I suppose the ever-present feeling that the PC is a softer market for this type of thing. I really don't know what to say. Other than I'm very disappointed. I'm very let down about that. I don't want to buy a console system to play a game like Destiny. I don't. That absolutely feels like it belongs on my PC.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say. It's the same way I would have felt
about Titanfall. Should it have only been the console exclusive type situation, I'd have been like, man, this needs to be on. And we should say it's the life of the title for Titanfall, by the way. And plenty of points were made saying that
there are loopholes all over that statement.
Yeah. Titanfall 2 could be multi-platform.
Right.
Titanfall
Sigma
Game of the Year Edition or something. Yeah. Any type of subtitle that we want to put on just putting Titanfall out there could very well end up on a PlayStation 4 or something like that. So there's some wiggle room.
I will say this far out, looking at either one of them this far out, and I don't know, and I probably will change my opinion. If it were not coming to PC, Titanfall would not be enough to sell me on a console, even if it were coming to both platforms. Destiny might be enough to drag me in. It might be one of those defining releases, one of those games that really draws me in. It looks like something. Titanfall looks like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Destiny looks very interesting, you know? And I hope people can understand what I mean by saying it that way. So we will see. We will see. And thankfully it's downrange far enough that I don't have to worry about it right now. And I don't have to worry about being swayed one way or another right now.
Yeah. At the end of last week's show, we were talking about what we were all going to be doing, and RJ had mentioned that he was going to be involved in a beta there, but that beta got delayed, apparently. You were all excited for this.
Yeah, I was looking forward to that, but
it was the Dark Souls 2.
Dark Souls 2 network test version,
right.
Yeah. The 90,000 folks were going to get on there and start playing, and then we got the message that it got delayed. We couldn't play it in the Americas.
At all?
No, I mean, you try to load the thing up, and it said...
No, I mean, but yeah. Did the message say that, nah, forget about it? Or did they say we'll be revisiting the Americas for a beta test later on?
No, I got the message from reading the news reports and whatnot online, but I didn't get a message through my through how
so they didn't inform you. You just had to go. You had to go to news sites and stuff.
I just had to find. Right. I didn't get a message through PSN. That just said.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's absolutely par for the course.
Sometime this month, I guess, November.
November 10th, I believe. Another early Sunday morning, 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. I have to recheck those times, but I think another set run is going to be for November 10th, and we'll see what happens then. It's not much of a wait. Probably got other things to keep us occupied between now and then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, this week we had the Sony release their huge FAQ for PS4 for the release.
They managed to keep a little, like, they're really, really trying to sneak in a few bitter pills.
Yeah, it wasn't a sense of, like, here's everything you need to know about the PS4. It's more like, here's everything
we haven't
told you yet about the PS4. Out of the box, this thing doesn't do much but play a game, and even then, that's questionable on some things.
Yeah.
It needs a network update, and even when it gets that update, it's still not going to do some of the basic things that these things normally do. I mean, it can't play MP3s or CDs or anything like that.
Yeah, which is not the whole and the locking it off from a DLNA DLA rather, yeah. I don't know. Nobody looks at that and is particularly happy about it because they see the obviousness that Sony is trying to move them into their subscription-based service. That's not really great. That's not something people seem to be happy about, but I believe if I read correctly that Yoshida was passing along those concerns, that he was at least willing to have dialogue about it.
And apparently it'll do some of those things. I don't know about the DLNA or DLNA?
Whichever you like.
I'm screwing it up all sorts of ways. But I don't necessarily know that was coming in a patch, but some of the things that people had issues with will be updated in a future patch, a further patch that comes down the line for the system. But
when that is, we don't know.
Exactly. No idea. No YouTube vid sharing at launch. Games will be playable while patches download.
No. I'm sorry. Was that just a no vid sharing at launch or no vid sharing at launch because no vid sharing ever? Technically, it's not at launch because we don't ever want you doing it at all.
True.
Right? Like, we don't want you going directly to YouTube. And anybody familiar with Twitch knows that not so long ago, a matter of weeks ago, actually, Twitch changed their policy and behavior from defaulting to archiving a stream to defaulting of not archiving your stream.
Right.
I'm imagining that's an anticipation of the unwashed masses of share button pressers who are just going to be overloading their streaming service, and they don't actually want to be archiving every little thing that happens. But I think this was actually the first real good picture we had of what it's going to mean to share media from the PS4. Because you're very clear, you cannot include a voice layer on top of your streamed content. So that you're actually not going to have direct fed voice input when you're streaming. And if you want to put your stuff on YouTube, then that's entirely up to you, but you have to go to your Twitch channel, you have to change the default behavior of your channel, then stream to Twitch, and then obviously from there you can cross-post over to YouTube, but you're not going to have any real-time impressions, which is going to make it, a little bit more difficult if you're just thinking about pressing the share button and suddenly I'm a Let's Player or something like that. Not insurmountable, not even technically very hard, but it really just means we're getting a glorified version. Oh, I hate it when people say that, so I hate myself now. But a glorified version of that snippet feature that we had with, was it OnLive?
Oh, yeah.
Where we used to just sit at the OnLive console in your living room and yuck it up at all the little funny things that people posted.
I'm trying to remember how that worked.
It was the same thing. They cached, like, every... if something funny happened, you could hit a button. They had a button on the controller, on the OnLive controller, and you could grab like
and
the
it would
last
just stock the last 15 minutes of play.
However long, yes, and you could cut out a piece of that. So, now there are contingents of people who actually don't like commentary on top of their videos or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe this will be good for them. Just straight video plays, long play format, type of stuff. So,
yeah.
But I did think that was interesting. There's not an awful lot of flexibility in terms of how the sharing of those things work. And you can share straight to Facebook, right? I believe so,
yes.
And you can stream directly to Twitch or Ustream, and that is very good. But not straight to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, yeah.
And we got an idea of what it would be like. Obviously, there are specs for the replacement drives if you want to switch out your hard drive. No external drives will be allowed to be used
right.
For the PS4. So that's something I've already started looking into is
replacing your drive.
Replacing the drive.
Well, if you want to balance the two things out, I think it's a little weird. I would prefer Sony's option a little bit. I would rather, because I have no qualms whatsoever about tearing something open and changing it, I would rather put in a hard drive of my choosing.
Yeah, because it comes with a 500 gig, 5400 RPM.
Right.
SATA 2.
Given my druthers, obviously, I'd want to get real spendy and put a solid-state drive in there, which was possible on the PS3. I can't remember if we're still waiting.
We're still waiting, I believe.
To learn if that's going to be possible on the PS4.
Yeah, as far as I know, that at the moment you can't, but not a lot of people have had their hands on this to really dig in and be like, hey, it can work. There's a lot of people waiting on some guinea pigs to try a lot of different stuff with hard drives to see what can and can't work for this thing. So
right. I have no problem with Microsoft's solution, though. Being able to use external drives is a big deal for a lot of people. It's plug and play. It's much more approachable. It's an approachable piece of design.
Didn't help me when I had to save files, back it up on that thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a good
option. I had to get
rid
of some stuff when I put in GTA 5 on my my 60 gig. Is it 60 or 80? Which one? 60.
Because there was embarrassing.
It was 60 because the original PS3 had a 60 and a 40 gig variants and I got the 60 gig, and I had to delete some things in order to install GTA 5 on my original system. The Slim that I've got at the other place. It had no problems with it, and I can't even remember what size that hard drive is.
Big enough.
250, something like that. It's
big enough.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, replacing a hard drive for a lot, it's not that difficult, but, not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody wants to, not everyone feels comfortable unscrewing and lifting parts out of their $400 to $500 purchase.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
I would rather replace that and then use thumb drives and stuff, which it will support, I believe. It just won't be able to mount it as a hard disk.
Right, no.
Yeah, yeah.
So either one is fine. Sure you can, I don't think that's going to be a make or break thing for anybody.
And we also got to look at the launch lineup, which seemed kind of smaller than what I remembered for some reason. I don't know why. Third-party titles, at least.
Wait, for the PlayStation?
For the, yeah.
Well, it's definitively smaller than it was before because
I guess
stuff went away.
Drive Club, Watch Dogs, that sort of thing.
That hasn't stopped GameStop from promoting the PS4 using Watch Dogs, has it?
You know, we walked in to get the... before the show, we stopped by GameStop and picked up that controller, and they're still on the wall. Was the Watch Dogs poster, reserve your copy today.
And a bunch of boxes.
Yeah, a bunch of boxes sitting out for it. Which I'm not saying that's strange.
It's still coming for the PS4.
Yeah. It's still coming out.
Yeah.
It's just coming out in March now. So
No, actually it's coming out some point after April 1st.
Right, we don't actually have a date, so we know.
But not first calendar quarter.
Right, exactly. Far enough away that it seems... strange that they would still have that up there. Obviously, I'm sure it's just left over from.
And
you know,
what else are you going
to
put up there?
They haven't sent anything else to replace it with. Obviously, Sony or whoever needs to. I don't think it's.
Yes,
Ubisoft
indeed.
To do that,
indeed, but. Truth. More time to sell pre-orders.
Mm. True.
Somebody somewhere is going to be happy about that.
Did they even say second or third quarter?
No, they just said at some point after April 1st, which puts it. Past the first quarter of next calendar year.
Yeah,
so that could mean April 2nd.
Could be December.
It could be December. Yeah. You never actually know. So
they should just say it later.
I still am in the camp of people that says, like, technically I will align myself with the people that are happy that, okay, it got pushed back obviously for some reason. If that leads to improvements... for a game that, by all reports from actual humans, not journalists, but from real people, the game has not shown well at anywhere they've had the option to look at it in person or put their hands on it, if that's been an option as well. But this is, it is going to be very interesting because this was an everybody game, right? This was every system, mm-hmm. cross-generational, all systems, all at once. It's kind of hard to figure out where the weak link would be, right? Is it one of the next-gen systems? Did they have problems with the last-gen systems? If any one specific thing was a problem, why not pull something like a kind of a protracted, elongated version of what Assassin's Creed did? Just throw the, you know, if you're confident in your design, throw the old school console games out there. Let them do their thing, and then push back the next gen.
Yeah, Battlefield 4 did it. And Assassin's Creed 4 have done it.
Right. What that tells me is they're not confident in the design. There are actually some fundamental things. And yeah. That's what worries me. If I were convinced that it was a technical issue with just one of the platforms and they wanted to push things back in that case, then I actually have more confidence in fixing technical issues. I don't like the notion that design is somehow the problem because... we'll revisit this at some point in the future, I imagine, but that's really what went wrong with Bioshock Infinite. And you could see the scars. Mm-hmm. You could see all of the scars in that game. And, yeah, fine. You know, a late game is only late till it ships. A bad game is bad forever. But I think that's a little bit too simple. I think it can be a little more complicated and a little more worrisome than that. And I have a bad feeling now, right? I have a bad sense and a fear that that's exactly what we're going to get with Watch Dogs. So,
yes, you do.
I actually don't know. I would like everybody to know that Scott is accepting a phone call right now, and he has already started.
This is Scott, yeah. We're actually.
He has already begun, and he is already gushing. There's gush absolutely everywhere in the studio.
Ear to
you can
ear
read
smile.
Into that whatever you want.
Ear to ear.
Yeah, I can hear him smiling.
Love fest.
I can die now. I can die. Okay, that was awesome. Anyway, so we're gonna take a break. I don't want to keep him on hold any longer than I have to. So we are going to go to a commercial break. And when we come back, we will be talking with Rand Miller from Cyan Worlds about Abduction, about Myst, about Riven, about any of your questions. If you're in the chat room, I encourage you to give us your questions. You can go ahead and start throwing those questions on the screen now. I'm going to try and keep up with them as they come along, and we will be asking him when he comes on the air in the next hour in-game chat. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. Music there from Riven, the sequel to Myst. Welcome to the show. This is the part of the show I've been looking forward to since, I think, last week when we made this actually happen. On the phone right now from Cyan Worlds is Rand Miller. Rand, good evening.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Wow. I'm sorry. You'll have to forgive me, and it really, actually, don't forgive me for this. It's just, played your game in 1990, I want to say it was 94, I played Myst. The only way I know that is because I kept the box, the big, giant
wow.
PC box of the time, and there's a little banner on the corner of it that says, I wrote this down in my gush of it a couple weeks ago, but there's a little banner in the corner that says, Winner, 1994, media game thing. I can't remember exactly what it was. Mac was involved. with the awards that it had won. But yeah, I have that box, and I have the giant. I have every box of the game that I purchased.
You're a true fan.
No, there are other. Fan. That guy who built an actual linking book, that's a true fan.
That's beyond true fan. That's just, yeah, that's something else.
That was amazing to see. But yeah, I have just been, I have, here's something else. Boy, if you were in studio, you'd be signing autographs the entire interview time. But I have an action figure of you.
Oh, get out of here. You have one of those? Those are rare. I don't even have one of those.
eBay. I have an action figure of you and of, and his name escapes me now, but I should know him because he was in Deadwood as well. The guy who played in Myst 3, Exile. Your action figure and now I can't
remember.
I can't remember his name.
You know, I didn't even,
Brad Dourif?
Brad Dourif. That's his name. Thank you,
Brad
James.
Well, thank you, chat room. Thank you, Brain Trust.
I met him and didn't even get to act with him because of the way things went. I got to say hi and, you know, hobnob with actor type person, and then, you know, that was kind of it. I went and cringed and did my stuff and was embarrassed, and then, you know, the rest is history. So yeah,
I've got that. Of course, I've got the three hardback books, first edition prints on those, which is a huge thrill. And I have something else from eBay. And again, the name. Suddenly, when you talk to people that you've admired for so very long, all your fan trivia just goes to crap. You can't think of these things anymore. But the hand stuff from Uru.
Yeah, the journey cloth.
The journey cloth. Kind of somebody had made a journey cloth on eBay, a life-size reproduction of one, and I was able to pick up one of those, and it hangs in my room now.
Cool.
So
that is awesome.
Huge fan. Yep. You have shaped the way that I have played games and enjoyed puzzle games, and so it is a real thrill to talk to you. I want to jump right into these questions. We are streaming live on Twitch right now, and so the people in the chat room are throwing these things shotgun, so I'm going to be jumping from place to place with some of these questions. First off, congratulations on Abduction. You guys are sitting, 750, I think, 730, something like that, I believe, with about 13 days left to go.
Yep, we're over 700, and it's going to be down to the wire, but the comments have been so exciting. You know, we didn't know what to expect from people, and it's been an amazing rush for us. I mean, we've got kind of renewed energy, so we're excited to push it into the home stretch.
Yeah, you're over $731,000 at the moment. You're looking for $1.1 million at the moment, and... everybody says you're going to make it. Everybody says you're going to get there. Not sure about the stretch goals, but you are going to make it in time. The first question I'm going to ask you right out of the gate, if it doesn't make it, what happens to Abduction?
Abduction doesn't get done, at least not for the foreseeable future. We kind of are loading all the eggs into the Kickstarter basket at this point. We've got other things to do at Cyan that are, you know, continue on, and we're kind of pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps little by little, rebuilding older products in the mobile market. But Abduction will kind of just go back to the back burner and wait for another opportunity, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, can you give us any idea? You guys have opened up donations from PayPal on that, I believe, haven't you?
Right. Right.
Any idea on how that's factoring into to where you're currently at as far as reaching the goal? I know it doesn't. It doesn't show up through Kickstarter, does it?
No, it doesn't. The last I heard, which was, I think, on Thursday, was PayPal was $7,000.
Okay, wonderful. Well, just as many avenues as you can to get those in there. Some of the questions that we've gotten, again, shotgunning these around. What is the status of the fourth Myst novel? How far along into production has it come, and when, if ever, can we expect to see it?
Oh, I get this one. I get asked this so much. Rawa, we have a guy at the office, Rawa. Any fans will know who that is. It's Richard Watson. And his comment on this is that we have a really big stove, and that's one that's on a burner at the very back. We would love to do that fourth one, but we want to do that one ourselves, and we just don't have the time, resources, and energy right now to pull that off. And we want to do it right. We don't want to throw it out there. It's a great concept. It's got great storyline and some really dynamic elements and something to say, and so we're just waiting till it can be done right. I don't know what that means as far as timeline. It's just when we can do it right.
As someone, these are from a thread in Reddit that I created. As someone who's on the fence about backing Abduction, what are some innovative gameplay features that'll get me excited as a modern gamer rather than a nostalgic 90s fan?
Well, I mean, first off, the engine itself is should get you excited. We're not doing slideshow. We're not doing the Myst slideshow. This is the Unreal Engine 4 is substantially powerful. And we're excited about what kind of world we can build with it and what kind of dynamic elements we can bring with it. And, this is a really tricky thing, describing any kind of gameplay and any kind of character development and storyline. It's in the Kickstarter, we kind of described it as the game has already started, and we don't want to spend too much of our equity, game equity, now. We want to have those reveals later. Mm-hmm. But suffice it to say, we want to do some things in Abduction that will, I described it as, kind of quicken your pulse a bit. So this is not about shooting, not about being killed, and not about frantic twitching with the controller, but we do want some things that may quicken the pace a little bit in some areas. And I'll just leave it at that, tease you with those kind of things.
That's fine. I know you guys have done some updates through the Kickstarter that have given spoiler warnings, and I've skipped every single one of them. I do not want to have any of this spoiled for me. That was one of the best things about Myst, was just being thrown on the island and said, here, go. You know, you have no reason, you have no idea why you're there. You have no idea how any of this stuff works or what is going to happen. Just go explore and discover. I love that about the game. So I'm keeping myself, I don't know. Do you want there to be a big distinction between Myst and Abduction in that regard? Is like, are they going to play the same, or is it, you still want to have that exploration type feel to it and that discovery type feel to it? Or is there, do you want them to be very different in that regard?
No, that's absolutely what we want. That feeling of Myst, when you are, you land on the dock and you begin your exploration, it's this really magical feeling. And the first time you start to put something together, I mean, you're just kind of thrashing a bit and you're throwing a few switches and reading a note. The first time you put something together, it's this great feeling. Like, wait a minute, something's gone on here. I'm a part of this story now, and I'm starting to understand how things fit together. And it's very satisfying. I mean, those of you who've played Myst know that feeling, that mm-hmm. I didn't use the hint book, I put this together and it worked, and that makes me feel really cool. And as a result, I get a revelation here. I get some new information that helps me on the journey. We want the same thing for Abduction. So you're a wise man not to see the spoilers. Those spoilers, this is a really, really tough exercise for us to reveal this information and try to tease with it rather than to just be blatant. And let me tell you, we go over and over those updates that have content in them, trying to tweak the words a bit here and a bit there, so that even if you do read the spoilers, we've still got things in our pocket to surprise you with. But best bet is your choice. Stay away from the spoilers.
One of the folks in the chat room wants to know, will Abduction be co-op, or would that be a stretch goal for the Kickstarter?
Oh, that's a good question. I can't say a lot about that. The experience in Myst, let me put it this way. What we found with Myst is that even though it was described as a solitary experience or a solo experience, a single-player game, we found almost a majority of people in some way experienced the game with someone else, either sitting with someone else in front of the monitor or on a phone call with somebody, what did you do? Or even, via email or at work the next day, what did you find? Here's what I found. Anyway, that idea of sharing the adventure is not lost on us. It doesn't mean that we want necessarily two people in there, but it would be a really interesting stretch goal to somehow allow the exploration to be shared. And that's one of the things we're kind of holding in our back pocket if we can get there.
Another question, how large will the worlds in Abduction be? Will they be uniform or varying sizes?
So we've generally described them as mist size, and you realize by describing them that way, it means that they will vary in size. But as a general rule, I think that kind of holds true. Even the islands in Riven, that kind of equated to ages, and they were similar. There were some mm-hmm. bigger, some smaller, but you get the idea of what we're shooting for.
Let's see. Will you be doing any voice acting in Abduction?
I don't want to do anything that has the word acting associated with it in any way. Although, you know, the little cameos or fun little Easter eggs, those are always cool. So I wouldn't, that's a possibility.
Let's see. Going back to some of the things you've done previously, somebody asks, will real Riven ever happen, or Riven Masterpiece, you know, the Starry Expanse project? Are you aware of that?
Yeah. Some of it depends on what gets done externally. Some of it depends on, you know, what we can do internally. It's that one is another very non-trivial task to accomplish. One of the problems we have is that the Riven models were in a very kind of proprietary modeling software that for the most part isn't around anymore. And so it's kind of from scratch. And so it's a labor of love. The big problem to turn it from a labor of love to an actual product is resources. And I'm not, as much as I would love to walk around Riven in real time, I'm just not sure that all the work involved in doing that would ever pay for it to a certain extent. So it kind of remains on the labor of love side of the chart.
Mm-hmm. You've done ports for Myst for iOS devices. Are there any plans to do the same for Android?
Yeah, that's been on our, it's one of those big stove questions. We've
right.
got that on the back burner. And it's, you know, we've got a lot of guys at the office who are Android. It gets into some interesting questions about how you charge for it and how you support it. And, you know, I don't want to get political as far as platforms go, but the Android is, I mean, just the fact is it is a little more fragmented, and we have to decide which Android specific, phones we want it to work on or systems we want it to work on. And then support those, especially if we charge for it. And it's a trickier business than iOS. It doesn't mean it's impossible. You know, for heaven's sakes, lots of people have done it. It's just we're still a very small shop, and putting the resources into that, once again, is just a matter of balance.
What do you think of the Wii U, and is there a chance to see Abduction on it?
You know, to be honest with you, I love the Wii, but I have not had a chance to play the Wii U, and I've heard great things. I don't think at this point there are plans to put Abduction on it. I think a lot of the platforms that we are aiming for have to do or are associated with what the Unreal Engine 4 will support, and so we've kind of tied our wagon to them right now. And in the past, Unreal Engine has supported a lot of other platforms. It's early on in their cycle, and I think it's easy for us to say Mac and PC kind of at this point and be pretty safe. Beyond that is conjecture, and we could do that, but as we all know, such conjecture is futile.
One of the opening lines of Myst. I remember it well. One of the things that we've got in the chat room now, well, you mentioned PC, is will Abduction go to Steam? Are you guys looking at Steam for distribution on that?
Yeah, I don't think we've officially announced that, but that is that's all but done. We have a great working relationship with Valve and Steam, and our other products are there. And mm-hmm. right now, that's kind of the obvious choice. This is almost a confirmation. I just, you know, not quite official, but yeah, that's what we're looking at.
Might as well be, I suppose. Because I picked up the titles when they were available on GOG, Good Old Games. And then when they hit Steam, I grabbed them there as well. I already had a box copy of Myst 5, but when Steam came up there and Steam started having it, I was like, well, I'll pick it up there. And of course, it's something else. I actually haven't finished Myst 5 because it was the end of it. And I thought, you know, if I never started, it never ends. And
wow.
So I know I have started it. Got my notes out and started taking the notes and that sort of thing. I haven't completely finished it yet, but it's one of those situations where it's like, it's always going to be there for me to anticipate and get around to playing. To have a Myst title in my life in the future is one of those things that I like to have. I've never not had that, and so I never wanted that to happen. So, but it will be now that I've got Abduction coming. I will finish Myst 5, and look forward to Abduction coming out as well. Something else, you sort of non-confirmed the Steam thing, but yeah, it's there. Who's doing the music for Abduction?
I would love to announce that, just can't yet. We have a lot of potential people to do the music, and. I can say it's not going to be Robin. He's we've had some great conversations about this. He's excited about us doing Abduction and has kind of, you know, tweeted support and supported us with stuff. So that's great. But he's on to other things and not involved in the music. We pick each other's brain quite a bit. So he, you know, no doubt he'll have some things to say about Abduction design, and I look forward to getting his opinion on stuff. So that'll be cool. But anyway, yeah, I can't go into who's doing the music, but yeah, stay tuned. No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly what the Kickstarter says. But it's one of those things, yeah. I'd love to ask and see if we could find out from you. But on the subject of music, though, a CD of the sound, will the soundtrack be included in box copies of the game? Will that be available?
Right now, we're just planning on, at least with the Kickstarter associated stuff, digital download. I think it's fairly obvious, like what we've done in the past, that we've kind of always loved doing CDs. They're kind of interesting, and attaching artwork to them and having that fun kind of physical piece is always an option. But I don't think we're planning anything for that with the Kickstarter. That would come later.
Another question: Do you still consider making Lattice?
Yeah.
If I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, Lattice. It's we over the years, as we've been doing sequels and playing in the Myst universe on and off, and onto the iOS stuff, we've had a few ideas that were always kind of sitting there gelling. They'd get more a little traction, a little less traction, and the two that always bubbled to the top were Abduction and Lattice. And for the Kickstarter, for this Kickstarter, we decided Abduction was the right way to go. Lattice is a much trickier project. It's a different animal. It would be a different kind of interactive entertainment. It's another one we would love to get a chance to do. And if the Kickstarter works or doesn't work, I mean, I don't know what the future holds, but it's... Let's put it this way: if this Kickstarter works and Abduction is successful, and we manage to pull that off and make everybody happy, it certainly bodes well for actually getting to Lattice at some point in the future as well.
Good to know. You talk about the Kickstarter? Has the response of this exceeded your expectations? How surprised have you been from what you've seen of the response to Abduction, the Kickstarter?
We talked about this earlier before doing a Kickstarter. I kept saying, my mind is too small to realize how you could ever get more than, you know, a few thousand or a few tens of thousands of dollars of support. I just can't grok the scale of how you get 100,000 or 200,000 or even 300. So from the beginning, it's always been, well, I just don't know how this is going to work. So, yes, it has greatly confused me on exactly how we can get over $700,000. I know it happens because I see other Kickstarters with it, but I just can't wrap my head around it. So that is awesome. We still have a ways to go, but But, you know, boy, I'm so appreciative for where we've gotten. And more importantly, as I mentioned earlier, the comments have just been unbelievable. I mean, we, you know, we're here in Spokane, Washington, and we feel sometimes we're out of touch and we don't really know what's going on. And we know we've got an incredible fan base. I mean, the fans are phenomenal. We've got the best fans in the world.
Oh, we love you.
But yeah, but we don't know beyond that, or, you know, how far reaching that was, or how much Myst was even important to people from years gone by who weren't really avid fans but just enjoyed the experience. And the comments have been so encouraging. It really has, you know, on the other side of this, even if we had made the money but the comments had been bad or there had been a lot more negative, I don't think we would have had as much energy this way. Man, when we hit the mark and we're ready to run, it's been good for our souls.
Well, you just got 250 more from one of our listeners in the chat room, Nabokov fan. James is his name. So he says he's looking forward to seeing more. He's never played a Myst game, but he has to see more of the artwork and design that you guys are doing. And yeah, I mean, if he's never played a Myst game, you got a lot to look forward to there. One of the other questions that we had was, how big is the team and what roles have you filled?
Oh boy, that's a good one. We kind of gave some information on who we've got now, at least some of the people we've got now, on an update. So, you know, we've got around, 12 people somewhere in there who are kind of on the current radar, of who will be involved. And, they're in departments like design and art and programming and, you know, the usual suspects. We've got a good core team for that. We don't have everybody in those roles. We've got, we need to expand in a few of those. Not getting too big. I think we really like the idea of working hard and working efficiently for this. So we'll keep it fairly small. You know, probably under 20, and for sure under 20. And TBD as to announced as to who those other ones are who kind of fill out the ranks.
Just a few more questions here. I know your time's limited, and I really appreciate everything you've given us so far this evening. Is there anything that you wanted to put in Myst, but time wouldn't allow?
Oh, man. Boy, Myst was fairly well spelled out when we designed it. It changed, as anybody who does game production knows. Games have a tendency to change, and I actually think that's a good thing. So it changed as we were building it. I think some of the things were different than what Robin and I had planned, but I don't know that... it feels like we got everything in there. I think there were pieces that had to be done a little simpler than what we thought might have to be done, and... Channelwood is a good example. I think in the end, Channelwood ended up being better, but we originally planned that as a much larger island that actually had landforms on it. And the puzzles were all pretty much the same as what we designed, but we lowered it down and just put it at a water level. And then instead of having land, we just raised things up into the trees, and I think it ended up being a much better experience. But no, I don't think there were any more things we could have done that we didn't design. I think the interesting thing, I guess that question leads me to, is if Myst had more money, it's possible it could have had another age, which is, you know, in some ways how we look at abduction as well. It's kind of a flexible budget at this point, so it'd be very natural to think that, you know, you could have added another age to Myst as part of the design, and it would have been, you know, a little bit bigger and hopefully a little more immersive.
Another interesting question about the Kickstarter, and you may or may not be familiar with the reference that it makes here, but Multal asks, how important is the release date and what is the action plan if you fall into the same problem that the Double Fine team found themselves run into, which is they needed more money after the Kickstarter was over?
Right. Well, the release date's important not just because because we told everybody that. It's important because we've got a budget that is going to pay for a certain amount of development, and we've tried to be very careful in planning out what we can do and how long it will take and what the monthly burn rate will be based on how many people we've got at different times of this, all the nasty financial things that you've got to do. There aren't any guarantees in the industry, and I kind of alluded to this in the Kickstarter campaign as well, but we're pretty good at estimating these days. We know where you never know where all the problems might occur, but we have most of the problems we've made over the course of many, many years. We started doing this around 1987, so my gray hair alludes to the fact that I've been in this a long, long time, and hopefully that experience can chalk up to being able to hit this pretty closely. I don't want to deceive anybody. It's a tight, tight schedule. I mean, it's a small budget as well. Mist was less money. Riven was quite a bit more money, and so this one is definitely tight. We would love to have a lot more, but we will design with whatever constraints we have, and that includes the budget as well.
Yeah, two more questions, and then we'll let you go. What if there's any news on Hired Dark?
I don't know anything about Hired Dark.
Are you being coy? Are you being coy? You're being coy.
Dark. I don't have a clue what that is. Yeah.
That's all I'm going to get from you, huh?
Well, you know what? Actually, I hadn't planned on this.
I love stuff like that. Go for it.
But listen very carefully to what I'm about to say, okay? Slash words slash less than update number 6 greater than.
I love talking with a guy who makes puzzle games because then he makes his hints and his words just
puzzle
like
answers.
Oh, yes. Oh man. Seriously, if I have the funds to do it, but I just know that putting in that big amount to get that trip to your guys' place and have lunch with you and that sort of stuff and talk about the game. Oh, man, do I want to do that? It is so tempting.
You know what? All that would do is crush your wonderful perception of me. You'd find out, oh, my gosh, he's just like a normal guy. No.
No.
I'd fall right off the pedestal.
Oh, I assure you, you would not, sir.
You'd tackle him off the pedestal.
The other thing is about the publication of Abduction. Will it be published through any other company like Ubisoft or anything like that, or is it just going to be self with you guys?
Right now, we're planning on self-publishing.
Well, yeah, you said in a video that you shipped it out, you mentioned it to some publishers, and they're like, we don't want to deal with this.
Right, and it's possible, they changed their minds, but it's very appealing to us. The whole way the indie market is progressing right now is so exciting because it's like the software market, the game market's been equalized. We have not just a way to distribute our independent works. And by the way, we're a larger shop. There's much smaller shops who have this same advantage. We have a way to distribute those things via mobile markets and iTunes Store and Steam and good old games. I mean, but we also have a way to fund them now, and that's just those two things combined to be a very powerful, exciting new tool for small shops and indie developers, and I think we're going to see some really cool innovation. And so that alone is a good reason for us to keep hold of Abduction so that we can kind of control it and make it be what we want it to be. It doesn't mean that there aren't other joint efforts that can't be done, but none of those we don't want anybody to control what this is. We want to make this, the experience that all of those fans and all those people who, that we've promised to them, that's what we want to make.
Yeah. Well, thank you again so much for being on the show. Just in regards to something that's been brought up before, have you seen or played any of Jonathan Blow's game, The Witness?
No, I've seen some. I've seen some of it, but I haven't got a chance to play it. I'm really excited to.
There's been a lot of comparisons.
Yeah, and I know it's, you know, comparing to Myst is both a, you know, a blessing and a curse, and I think Jonathan would agree. I think it's easy to maybe over compare it, and I think that's the curse part. I think the blessing is that he took a seed of Myst and was inspired to do something, you know, different, but his own kind of thing. And so I'm really excited to see it. I know people who are connected with it, so I have an inside track, and it won't be long before I can kind of hopefully see a little bit more.
Great. Well, once again, Rand, thank you so much. Everybody in the chat room appreciates you doing this. They wanted me to send you their love, and it's been a huge honor and thrill to be able to speak to you today. So thank you so much for the past. The way that I've grown up with Myst and played games and put what you guys have done as the standard for every other puzzle game, adventure game thing that comes along in its vein, to see if it lives up to that. It's made me appreciate puzzle games. It's made me appreciate game design. And so thank you for that. And thank you for being on this show of ours. We really do appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love talking about it. I love the questions. It's been this is great. The whole thing has been just the whole Kickstarter and getting renewed and reinvigorated has been a great experience. We're looking forward to the future.
Well, when this thing gets funded and gets made, we would love to have you back on the show around its release or during the development of it and tell us how the process is going and everything else. So again, thank you. I can't thank you enough, man.
Oh, my pleasure. That's awesome.
I appreciate it. Have a great night, and thanks again for being on the show.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. That was Rand Miller from Cyan Worlds. Everybody in the chat room, thank you so much for being in there. We're not actually done with the show. We've got another about 20 minutes left in the show to go, so hopefully you'll stick around. But thank you so much for joining us in the chat room here. When we come back, we will have more of In-Game Chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. I have caught my breath, settled down just a little bit there. Great interview. Again, thanks everybody in the chat room for throwing those questions. It's one of the reasons we do these interviews is not just so that we can talk about the games and we can talk to these people who come on the show, but so that you have an opportunity to also speak to them through us and get your questions answered, that sort of thing. I would have loved to have actually done the conference call and had you guys call in and directly speak with him. But there's a big worry of this old dinosaur equipment cutting out and losing both calls. And I didn't want to.
Scott hung up on an astronaut once.
I did.
And he lives in fear of repeating that moment every single time. And I promise you, if he were ever to repeat it, it would be with one of his idols.
Exactly. And so I just didn't want that to happen.
I would laugh at you.
And you would walk home.
Yeah,
I would leave you here. Anyway, welcome back to the show, guys. We got about 15 or so minutes left in the show. I don't even know what we're going to talk to next. Maybe Battlefield 4.
It's jumping off a little bit much. Certainly, we had more entirely different flavor. We had ages and ages of questions, and the fan response is incredible, and we probably could have gone on for an incredible amount of time, and I actually... I'm very sad for you and the other fans that you couldn't. But having time to fill, being the week of launch of Battlefield, I know you said you played a little bit of it. I haven't played a whole lot more. I got it, you know, I stayed up very, very late on Monday night into Tuesday and played it as much as I could.
Well, Batman is still holding my attention for all the bugs and problems that the thing has.
Yeah.
I'm still, well, you know, I'll get in there and I'll start finding the little Riddler data packs around, the little hidden things that you can go through and do with that. I haven't advanced the story since my write-up on ingamechat.net, since I wrote about it there. I have not advanced the story because, well, they fixed one bug, but it seems to have possibly created another towards the end of the game. And so I'm very nervous about going through that until I hear more reports that, hey, things are working again. So I've sort of stayed away. The challenge rooms are keeping me interested. The combat stuff, trying to get the 3 gold medals, going through the challenges and doing the score stuff, that's really been keeping me in there. But lately I'm starting to feel a little bit of the burnout now and wanting to move over into Battlefield, so
I
fired that up.
I don't want to hear anything bad about the game necessarily. I haven't done anything more than just install it to the 360, but I really would at some point like you to evolve to telling me how you feel about the game rather than I'm doing this challenge, I'm completing that other challenge, I'm filling up bars.
Well,
I'll tell you
what I know so far. Again, I have not finished that. Let's put the bugs out of the way for the time being.
Actually not that concerned with them.
Yeah. Well, to put those aside for a minute, the story is okay. The cutscenes outdo any of the ones from the previous games. Love those. Action packed, smooth, just beautiful
the
looking.
The cutscenes.
The little cinematics.
The not gameplay is fantastic in the game. Thanks a lot for that.
I'm just picking things out so far. I've enjoyed the gameplay. It doesn't really switch up much from the other two games as far as that's concerned.
Which is fine.
They did tweak the combat just a bit in my favor. I've enjoyed it more than some others have. They sped up the attacks of your enemies when they in combat. It's fine. I've adapted to it well, I guess. Some people haven't. I don't know. I was never actually very good in the previous combat.
Does it feel like streamlined and simpler, more or less?
How would you streamline that kind of combat any further?
I'm not sure. I don't necessarily know that they've streamlined it.
I've gathered is that the timings are a little bit different, and that on average the challenges are more difficult because there are more spoiler enemies. There's more combo breaker type enemies in the crowd. They're more armored guys. They're more guys with alternative weapons and stuff like that. It isn't just 90%, you know, regular level one goons.
Yeah, that's very much the case. In most of the fights that you'll come across, not even halfway into the game, is that you're always going to have an armored guy in there. Once you hit halfway into the game or even a little bit further, the armored guys, the guys with the shields, I haven't triggered the stun baton guys, but they're ahead. They're coming up. I haven't triggered those guys to start showing up in the world yet, but they're on their way. So I've enjoyed the combat of it. To the story part of things, I've enjoyed the boss battles much more than I did in Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. I've enjoyed the boss battles fights there.
You mentioned how much fun you had with Deathstroke, I think.
Deathstroke was a great just brawl type situation. Mm-hmm. And some of these have been reported as like, these are just kind of glorified QTEs. Understand that I love QTEs. Some people are going to hate me for making that comment, but I love QTEs.
I don't hate you for making the comment, but it's not a good comment because QTE covers way too much stuff. It covers way too many different things. To simply say QTE covers, honestly, it covers everything from the person-on-person knife attacks and the counter-knifing in Battlefield 4 all the way back to Heavy Rain. It's like saying I hate or I love, I don't know, whatever, like moving forward or something. I don't know. It's not quite that generic, but just to say QTEs is not entirely fair because their implementation is so varied now. And they can be done well, they can be done poorly, they can be subtle, they can be grotesque. So I wouldn't say, honestly, that you like horrible, grotesque, clunky, overbearing QTEs.
Yeah. Well, take the Deathstroke fight, for example. A lot of that is just timing your counters. And the counters will get in the hits, will activate some cinematics that also have QTEs within them. And that'll get the damage done. But there are moments in the regular fight that you can advance. You can kind of go on the offensive and fight. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you'll get in one or two shots. But you still need to resort to what it wants you to do, which is counter. It's just so beautiful the way it does It doesn't feel like a fight. It feels like a Batman fight. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like those boss fights from Arkham Asylum or Arkham City where they had, and we talked about this in the last show, they had gimmicks, they had tricks. And you could call this a trick, just doing the QTE and the countering and the fighting thing, but you know, some of the fights were saying, well, you've got to use this specific weapon when you fight him in order to take him out, that sort of thing. Doesn't seem to apply in Arkham Origins. The story, like I said, the story was okay up to a certain point. I was getting bored with it about 50% of the way through. Then I went into the hotel section. When you go into the hotel section, that's when it got amazing. It got great for me. I don't really want to tell you exactly what happens there. I'll tell you why. Because they did a bit of fan service that isn't related to pulling in the guys from the animated show or anything like that. Although, Bullock's voice actor is the same guy from the animated series, but the only one that returns.
Okay.
They did a bit of fan service that was wonderful. Things switch in a segment. You get a nice dialogue as you're playing. Just very well done, and elevated the entire story itself above any of the two previous games. Honestly, for me. So, again, in fact, that section, you go from about being 50% complete to, once you're done, 90% complete. That's how far it advances. It feels quick, but it goes, but it really advances that story. So, anyway, that's my take on Batman Arkham Origins so far. I've just really, really, really enjoyed it.
You just really, really like it.
I really do. You know how it comes for me. You know how it is. You know how it is when it comes for me. I try to do better. I really do. And it devolves into this.
You don't try. It's the problem. It's okay. It's fine. It doesn't matter. I booted it up just enough to get all of the introductory nonsense out of the way. Mm-hmm. And he lands and I've got gameplay. And I just didn't like it right away. I didn't really understand the argument that people wanted something entirely different. I mean, I did. I couldn't figure out why choose this game? Why get into this game? Recognize that it does, you know, again, bugs aside, design features, it's mostly got everything in common with the previous games, and it does them fairly well, and it's kind of enjoyable, but I realized that along with a lot of these other people, I'm really done with this iteration of Batman. And I feel like what a waste to do. I mean, I know technically it's not year one, it's something like year two, but mm-hmm. what a waste to do the early years of Batman and to do it this way. It's not another of the same that I mind. It's that I feel like a definitively weaker, more vulnerable, less tentative, less sure of himself type of Batman would have been really fantastic. And maybe that comes through in some of the dialogue, but in all of the design decisions up front, you know, it didn't really seem that way to me, and I didn't much care for it. I'm anxious, I guess, is the point. I'm not looking to change anything about what this game is, and I again, have barely played any of it.
Yeah.
But I'm anxious for a different iteration. I'm anxious for something much more aggressive, much more, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like cerebral,
mm-hmm.
you know? I am anxious to explore the other things about what makes Batman, Batman. And I know that it's hard. I do, and I know that I'm asking for the moon here. But Batman is more than beating up thugs. Batman isn't a thug. And if I can pull out my little soapbox here for a second, that's what I hate about the modern interpretations of Batman, is that he is science fiction levels of technology to solve the crime and Master Chief levels of brutality to deal with his enemies. All of the subtlety, all of the engaging, fear-inducing, the mystery, the riddle, everything about Batman, the big question, is left unasked. and all of his brilliance, and Batman was, like, preternaturally brilliant, not just a giant block of meat. And I feel like we've been there for so long now, in this meat block, both in these recent films and in the recent games. And they are quite good, and he is treated with respect, but it's less than what I want. The character's too interesting to do so little with it, in my opinion.
Yeah. Now, speaking of not having a problem with it, with, you know, just being more Batman-type situation, obviously this being a sequel-prequel type thing, just it's the third game in a series.
Yes.
You've just fired up the fourth game in a series with Battlefield.
Yes.
And I know...
No, actually, that's not quite true. Both of the Bad Company... I mean, to say that this is the fourth game
true.
In a series is
that's
exactly
right.
correct.
Right, yeah.
Because they have not done direct iterations in the same way. To say that this is Battlefield 4 is to just say, like, hey, here's another Battlefield.
Right, yeah.
There are a lot of arguments about whether this is a significant increase past what Battlefield 3 was doing. I think it's a fair question. I think the map designs are fantastic. The maps are absolutely fantastic. I mocked and poo-pooed the whole Levolution concept, and I still think it's a stupid piece of branding, but it seems to be catching on. And in the maps, it seems certainly a lot of fun, although I do think it's a bit much. And I'm not talking about now. I'm not talking about week one or week two or even month two. I really am talking about this is the thing we're going to live with for a while. And I don't know that... these transformative events, you know, the things, the collapsing of buildings, the flooding of an entire zone, it has a huge effect. But I don't know if it's going to be as enjoyed kind of downstream, you know. Flood Zone, for example. Depending on your type of gameplay, depending on the type of thing you like to play, the first half of Flood Zone, before the levee is broken and before the entire area becomes sunken and submerged, is much more enjoyable to me. Because I don't play... I'm not a vehicular player, you know. I like infantry play, and it becomes a very infantry-hostile map after that point.
Are a lot of these maps like event maps type situations?
Well, they all are.
Okay.
Well, they all are. There is a Levolution event in all or nearly all. Not every one of them, but I don't know. The jury's still out. Mm-hmm. It's very far out. We've only just now gotten a couple of patches that added network and game stability. So we need to revisit this in another couple of months. And there'll be other things to ask then. The China Rising map pack.
That's true.
The Mantle API for... Frostbite 3 and AMD cards.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Like any good or respectable or weighty and important multiplayer game, you can't have your answers right away. You have to wait for it. So,
yeah. Well, I think that'll do it for this episode of In-Game Chat. I want to thank everybody for joining us in the chat room, as well as everyone listening on the stream, or even if you're listening on the radio right now. Thanks to everybody who showed up for the interview and stayed for the first hour. Listen to the interview and hopefully stayed around for the last couple of minutes here. We do appreciate it. And thanks to everybody who grabs us every week from iTunes or however you get our show for later use. We really, really do appreciate it. Don't forget to join us over on Twitter. You can join us on Facebook as well. And you can also check out our forums at colonyofgamers.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, please. And you can subscribe to our Twitch channel. And if you're on Steam... well, we've got a Steam group that you can join up with over there and play games with us and other listeners. So, thanks, everybody. We will see you again next Saturday night.